From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The confessed swindler Bernard Madoff ran a Ponzi scheme measured in the tens of billions of dollars. Investors are suing for their losses. A court-appointed trustee is suing Madoff's feeder fund operators for their profits. Everyone seems to want the IRS to give back the taxes they paid on phantom capital gains. If anyone actually benefited from Madoff's criminal enterprise, it would be, of course, the investors who got out early, and Vanity Fair magazine. Vanity Fair was not an investor, but Madoff gave the magazine such a wealth of material to write about, tales of the venality and stupidity of the nouveau riche, that it is the gift that keeps on giving. Over the past few months, reporters Mark Seal and David Margalik have written extensively about the Madoff case, and they both join us now, Seal from Aspen Public Radio in Colorado and Margalik from our bureau in New York. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert. Great to be here.
Mark Seal, you recently wrote an article with Bernard Madoff's secretary, Eleanor Squillari, and the big question is, did she know? What do you think?
No, she didn't know, and she worked beside him for 20 years. That's how good he was, and she was completely flabbergasted like everybody else. She met the FBI at the door when they came in for the first time, and she was totally dumbfounded, and she's a pretty smart woman.
Eleanor Squillari says that Madoff really orchestrated the confession, the surrender to the authorities the day of the collapse. And in a video interview at the Vanity Fair website, we can actually hear her describing that day and getting a phone call from Madoff.
He asked me if anyone has been in his office, and I said yes, and he wanted to know if they had been in his briefcase, and I said yes, and he said, and what about my appointment book? I said yes, they have been in it. And it was then that I realized that those were the things that were happening that were different. Like Bernie never went anywhere without his appointment book, but he was leaving it on his desk.
Mark Seal, if Bernard Madoff orchestrated the events of that day, did he orchestrate the appearance of other people's innocence?
I believe he did, and Eleanor went on to say that he staged the arrest, and I believe that he staged it, and he wanted it to go down exactly the way he wanted it to go down. He's a very controlling individual and a very calculating individual, and he just did it his way, and I think what we're seeing is the result of that. He's the only one in jail, right, so far?
Well, David Margalik, your article in the July issue of Vanity Fair is about Madoff's two sons, who both worked for him. Is it conceivable to you that they didn't know?
It's conceivable to me that they didn't know the details of what was going on. And my explanation is that they really just looked the other way. They weren't terribly curious. They thought of their father in exalted terms, and they were living very well themselves and weren't particularly curious about what was going on.
There was an entire floor of the Madoff operation that was devoted to what we now know was the Ponzi scheme. There were other activities going on that I gather were not part of that. David, how many people do you figure who worked there, how many people do you think had to know that this fabled hedge fund operator was faking it?
Well, I think that probably they're the prime suspects here. I'm not sure how much they knew, but they must have known that some kind of fabricating was going on. I think that that's the epicenter of the investigation. I think that the prosecutors are looking primarily on the 17th floor rather than on the 19th floor where the sons worked.
Mark Seal, what did Eleanor Squillari say about the 17th floor?
Well, the 17th floor was a completely different world from the other floors. It was a mess, pretty much, is what she said, and it was staffed by a couple of key people, but other than that, low-level women who didn't seem to be able to connect the dots, is what she said. The place was, there was old computers were in the top. Everything was state-of-the-art. It was desks jammed together. It was quite a different world than the other floors.
Eleanor Squillari, Madoff's longtime secretary, in her interview online that I've seen in the article with you, she's obviously appalled and flabbergasted at what Madoff was doing. But she does seem to retain some affection for the guy, or am I misreading that?
No, absolutely, she does. And she, I think Bernie is such a charismatic individual that a lot of people do, even though what he's done is so incredibly evil and horrible, and she realizes that. But at the same time, she remembers the boss that she once had, who she really liked a lot and respected, as so many people did.
Do you hear strains here of the end of the producers when Max Bialystock, the con man, is still beloved by the widows he's been fleecing all those years?
Exactly. That's it to a T. You know, that's the way he is. He was so magnanimous and such a mensch, you know.
The exception to the rule of Bernie being, you know, still being beloved is the Sons. The Sons haven't spoken to him since December 10th, since the day that he confessed to them. And, I mean, there are different theories about why they've not spoken. I mean, if you listen to people close to the Sons, since the Sons have not given interviews to anyone, they'll say that the Sons were just as surprised as anyone and shocked by all of this as everybody else, and they feel utterly betrayed by their father. I mean, one of them called this a betrayal of biblical proportions. And they're so furious with him, apoplectic really, that they haven't talked to him, they haven't been to jail to visit him, even when they were on jury duty only a few blocks away.
The requisite genius of a successful Ponzi scheme operator is to constantly be attracting more and more and more money while letting people think that it's something very exclusive, that only, you know, only some may invest. And he pulled that off to a T. Mark said he was perfect at that somehow.
Yeah, he was great at that. That was his great talent, the power of no. You can't get in. We're closed. And no matter what it is, you know, if you can't get into something, you want in it all the more. So people were lined up trying to get in, groveling to get in, meeting him at country clubs, you know, doing whatever it took, sometimes even joining country clubs to get close to Bernie Madoff.
Whereas if he'd said no to everybody, he was finished because he needed investors to pay off the old ones.
That's right. And at the end, he was furiously courting new investors and creating a new fund and trying to get money from old investors. So you can see him scurrying at the end to bring in more and more money.
David Margalek, you came away with a similar high regard for his gift in that sense.
Oh, I think so. But I think you also have to be impressed by the credulity of the people who invested and the desperation and almost the laziness, the lack of due diligence of the people who pumped their money in. I mean, when it comes right down to it, people really don't know much about this world, and they're looking for some kind of Virgil to give them a tour through it. And they don't really do much investigating, and they defer far more to someone like him than they would in circumstances where the stakes are much lower.
David Margalek and Mark Seal, both of Vanity Fair magazine, thank you very much for talking with us about Bernard Madoff and your articles about it.
It's a pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Great to be here.